About a century ago, anthropologists and collectors took artifacts and remains of Native Americans in the Pacific Northwest to various museums around the country. And now we are voluntarily returning the remains that have been collected to the Haida Nation because we believe that it is the right thing to do.
A dancer in a turquoise mask takes the floor. His head switches from side to side, seeming to glare at the onlookers. He's the Gagit, the wild man of the forest. By tradition, this dance will serve to clear the air. All week, the Haida have been handling the bones of their people, adults and children, bones that were taken without permission. A Haida matriarch speaks, and indeed, there is some air clearing to be done here.
My Haida name is Gada, and the other one is Isquajot. To tell you the truth, it was very emotional, knowing there were so many ancestors taken away. And I think the saddest part was the little babies.
A day earlier, one of the Haida wandered through the museum's Pacific Northwest collection. "Why is it so dark in here?" he asked. "Don't they know we are a living, vibrant people?"
My name's Andy Wilson, co-chair of the Repatriation Committee. When I first started, they said there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that we have to get back from museums around the world. I said, "What do you mean?"
Jonathan Haas, I'm the MacArthur Curator of the Americas at the Field Museum in Chicago. When museums were collecting human remains, that was part of a larger worldview at that time. And as we wanted to collect all the animals and all the plants, I think there was a similar notion in anthropology that, well, we should go out and collect one of all of the people out there. It may have been done in a colonial and patronizing way, but I don't think it was being done by bad people who were out to do bad things.
I think it's wrong in the context of any time. I don't think people should have done that.
After the Gagit, others take the floor. First the eagles dance, and then the ravens, the two clans of the Haida. 100 years ago, the experts thought their race was doomed, but now, in order to go forward, they are returning to these traditions.
You know, there was a story behind it when I was growing up. There was one elder, and he used to say, "It's so sad what they did, but we didn't speak English, so we couldn't stop them. They just took them." And they used to say the spirits are wandering. Now that we're taking all these remains home, the spirits wouldn't be wandering around. They'll be settled in their own home ground. This was their belief, and I really believe in it too.
I think we've gone through a lot as a people, and I think it's important to show respect to the ancestors. I think it's also important to show respect to ourselves, to let people know that we survived all that and that we can still reclaim what is ours, to heal a part of our past.
In the weak afternoon light, the long procession to the cemetery begins. Chief Chikal leads the way, wearing his wooden wolf crown and a cape of ermine. The other clan chiefs fall in behind, and then the singers and the rest. Many of the people wear conical hats woven from cedar. Their family crests are draped across their shoulders in red and black. And clutched to their chest are large cedar boxes draped in cedar boughs. Each contains the bones of an ancestor. Andy Wilson, a middle-aged Haida with thick glasses, built these boxes under an awning by his house. There are 84 of them for this repatriation. Over the years, he's built hundreds.
This is the bentwood boxes, the same as the way they used to make them in the old days, to either be storage for clothing or food, or for our purpose, they used to bury the ancestors in these bigger ones.
Each box is fashioned from a single cedar plank, steamed and bent into four sides and fastened at the corner.
Slow, 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 slow. There you go.
It's an old skill passed down like the Haida songs Wilson learned as a child, back when the white authorities were still trying to ban Haida traditions.
One of the things my grandfather did was he would have people watching outside his house there, because we weren't allowed to gather like that to learn those song and dances. So that was around 1956, 57. So there was a whole different flip in there in the school systems for how people perceive Native people. And when my daughter came home and she started singing and dancing, the emotions just came out of inside me, you know. I started crying, and that was just too overwhelming for me.
The procession moves along past Wilson's house and past the famous dogfish totem pole with its frog and bear and man, and at the top its three wooden watchmen looking out to sea. Once 6 dozen poles lined this shore, but disease nearly obliterated the Haida and the poles fell or were taken down one by one. This pole, raised in the 1970s, was the first new pole in over a century. The carver's granddaughter, Nika Collison, reflects on her people's changing fortunes.
This is all just 200 years ago that Europeans first got here. And it was in the mid-1800s that we went from way over 10,000 people to under 1,000 in a couple of years. Then there's some missionaries and residential school and just a lot of devastation, alcohol, all that. It's the story. It's all over the world this happens. So we're just ready to do it now. We're the generation that inherited that right to make things better.
It's Guja singing now. His name means drum. The elected president of the Haida is a politician by day and an artist who spends his evenings in the carving shed.
This is the upper part of the pole. It has to be round. So while there might be some people who kind of gasp and say, you mean to say they killed a 500-year-old tree just to carve it up? Well, that's true, but at the same time, it's through this art and through the cultural efforts that we protected about half of this island because of the cultural need for cedar.
Carving and art were the beginning of a cultural renaissance for the Haida. But today they fight on many fronts, including in the courts. The Haida, who never signed a government treaty, have sought to regain title to their traditional land. And this year, Canada's Supreme Court handed them a partial victory, ruling that the Haida must be consulted on land use decisions.
So the ability to take resources from the land is a part of it. We want to be sure that in the future we know exactly what old forest will still remain and the integrity of the watersheds to produce clean water for the spawning salmon, for example.
The lawsuit makes many non-Haida on the islands nervous, but not the part-time mayor of a nearby, mostly white, logging town. Dale Lohr supports the Haida claims.
I work building logging roads. I've been here 18 years. In the old days, the Haidas would be screaming, you know, stop, 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 you're doing too much, you're doing too fast. And we were going, hey, you've got lots of Haidas working, what's the problem? But eventually, you've become aware of how much forest there is. And nobody else has a vested interest in what happens here except the people that live here. And 99.5% of the people that are going to stay here intergenerationally are Haida.
In Skidigit, the parade has reached its end. Guja sings again above the grave. a warrior song because he says this is a battle, all a battle. And then the shovels do their work, and the people retrace their steps, and the ancestors rest in peace, and tonight, at last, there is a feast.